According to the theories of paleoacoustics, a clay pot would work much in the same way, with the pot acting as the recording medium and the stylus as the needle. In theory, sound vibrations moving through the stylus would be etched in the grooves of the pot, just waiting to be played back like a phonograph. This was an idea elucidated in the 1960s by Richard G. Woodbridge and David Jones, two of the early modern practitioners of paleoacoustics. As Jones described, a trowel, like any flat plate, must vibrate in response to sound. Thus, drawn over the wet surface by the singing plasterer, it must emboss a gramophone-type recording of his song in the plaster. Once the surface is dry, it may be played back. But in fact, paleoacoustics has been around for much longer than that, since the theory that some sort of immemorial record exists in the environment, just waiting to be unlocked, was first postulated in the 19th century by Charles Babbage, who, incidentally, was also the first to propose the concept of a programmable computer. As he eloquently illuminated in his seminal presentation on the permanent impression of our words and actions on the globe we inhabit, the pulsations of the air, once set in motion by the human voice, cease not to exist with the sounds to which they gave rise. Strong and audible as they may be in the immediate neighborhood of the speaker, and at the immediate moment of utterance, their quickly attenuated force soon becomes inaudible to human ears. The motions they have impressed on the particles of one portion of our atmosphere are communicated to constantly increasing numbers, but the total quantity of motion measured in the same direction receives no addition. Each atom loses as much as it gives, and regains again from other atoms a portion of those motions in which they in turn give up. The waves of air thus raised perambulate the earth and ocean surface, and in less than 20 hours, every atom of its atmosphere takes up the altered movement due to that infinitesimal portion of the primitive motion which has been conveyed to it through countless channels, and which must continue to influence its path throughout its future existence. There, in their mutable but unerring characters, mixed with the earliest as well as with the latest sighs of mortality, stand forever recorded, vows unredeemed, promises unfulfilled, perpetuating in the united movements of each particle, the testimony of man's changeful will. In other words, every sound ever made is out there, just floating in space. Babbage was right about the computer. Was he right about this too? As ahead of his age as Babbage was, it was not until modern times that mainstream science began attempting to put the theories of paleoacoustics into practice, to try, as it were, to successfully recover ancient sounds. Now, some scientists are examining 3,000-year-old Greek pottery, searching for sound vibrations carved into the glaze by the potter's tools. Others have recreated the song of a 165-million-year-old insect using fossil remains and a computer, in what the Smithsonian called a landmark in paleoacoustics. Elsewhere, there is the work of Patrick Feaster, who has coined the term paleospectrophony to describe his practice of converting visual representations of sound, music, speech, and rhythm into audio. From diagrams of the singing of Russian peasants to sound spectrograms from the National Academy of Sciences and the FBI, Feaster has found a way to play mute images, which recorded sound graphically, in much the same way as a computer plays an MP3 file. In doing so, he has challenged ideas about what sound recordings are. Simply, every day, science learns more about the hidden history in our environment and how we might hear or view it. As it does, one might wonder if the Vatican had, in its chronovisor, a more advanced version of what mainstream science is only starting to scratch the surface of. But then, what type of technology is more advanced than mainstream modern science? Of the team of 12 scientists alleged to have been assembled by Pellegrino Ernetti to construct the Vatican's chronovisor, the names of only two have ever been released. But look closer at one of these two in particular, the infamous Wernher von Braun. Von Braun was a Nazi scientist, one of the stars working on Hitler's Wunderwaffe projects. These Wunderwaffe, or miracle weapons, were said to include attempts at stealth fighters, acoustic cannons, anti-gravity technology, and perhaps even time travel. Some accounts even said scientists like von Braun were working on a way to create a window into the past. At the end of World War II, von Braun fled the losing side to the United States as part of the U.S. government's Project Paperclip, in which many high-level Nazi thinkers were quietly smuggled into the country and put to work for the U.S. government. There, von Braun became an esteemed NASA scientist, the father of U.S. rocketry, and a key player in the space race. Is it possible that another project he continued to work on while in the United States was a window into the past? If it was, then von Braun would not have been the only employee of the U.S. government working on such a thing. Concealed within the archives on the website of the CIA, there exists an exceedingly strange document. It describes an experiment the CIA conducted in 1984, providing a seemingly unedited transcript which descends into the bizarre. First, according to the transcript, the subject of the experiment is given a sealed envelope and instructed not to open it. Whomever is conducting the experiment then begins to give the subject instructions, directing him to investigate different random coordinates, while providing no other information as to what these coordinates mean. As they do, the subject describes the incredible things he sees: an obelisk like the Washington Monument, rounded bottom-carved channels like roadbeds, a series of pyramids. Inside these pyramids, the subject describes coming across what he calls an ancient people. "They're dying. It's past their time or age," he exclaims. As the experiment draws to an end, the subject is instructed to open the envelope he was given at the beginning. Inside, written on a 3x5-inch card, is the following: "The planet Mars. Time of interest, approximately 1 million years B.C. Titled Mars Exploration, May 22, 1984, it appears the document recounts an actual attempt by the CIA to use what is called astral projection in order to visit the planet Mars 1 million years in the past. What the subject had been describing then were the vestiges of an ancient Martian civilization. We even have a video of the now-found remnants of pyramids and obelisks on Mars, just as the subject described in 1984, together with a mysterious face resembling the face of the Great Sphinx. The link to the video will be in the comments below. It may sound bizarre, but for the CIA, it was decidedly not. In fact, the experiment was part of what was known as Project Stargate, an operation in which the CIA tested the possibility of all types of paranormal powers. Publicly available documents reveal the project's focus on psychoenergetics, defined as the mental processes by which the individual perceives, communicates with, and/or perturbs characteristics of a designed target, person, or event, remote in space and/or time from that individual. Most specifically, Project Stargate was interested in remote viewing, that is, using the mind alone to see things which aren't immediately present, whether they be in the present time, the past, or even the future. Bizarre as they may be, there is no doubt the CIA was looking hard at these things. The only question is, how far did they get? It all started with a man named Andrew Basciago, a Seattle attorney who came forward in the mid-2000s with the claim that he had been a part of a secret U.S. government operation known as Project Pegasus. According to Basciago, he had been recruited as a child into the project, which was experimenting with highly advanced technologies like teleportation and holographic time travel, sending children like him to different planets and times in history. As for his own experiences, Basciago described watching Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and being in attendance at Ford's Theater the night of his assassination. He had visited, he said, George Washington's battlefield tent during the Revolutionary War, and even gone back to see Jesus. One might note the similarity of these claims to Arnetti's description of his use of the Chronovisor. Were Basciago and Arnetti's accounts similar because they were using the same fundamental technology? Could Project Pegasus merely represent the next generation of the Chronovisor project? From Wernher von Braun and his Wunderwaffe, to the Vatican, to the CIA, and beyond? Perhaps we will never know the answers. Or perhaps modern science will tell us soon enough. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed the video, please hit the like button. And if you're new, hit subscribe and the bell next to it for future notifications.